I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Frank Sinatra singing about the summer wind. Yeah, it got warm in Ramadi today, so it's summer's breaking out someplace.
The summer wind came blowing in.
Right, you could see him singing someplace in New York City. He's got a glass of scotch in his hand, and he's got his bow tie undone from his tux. Cigarette in the other hand. Right? Being the chairman of the board. Not a bad gig if you can swing it, man, I'm telling you. Joining me, the head of the news division at Sandbox Incorporated, Alex Hollings. Alex, what is up? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, I'm going a little stir crazy being locked up in the house.
Come on, man. You've deployed. You can do this.
I'll tell you, like, it's amazing how, you know, because I work from home normally, so you'd think that I'd be totally accustomed to this, but it's weird how those little trips out of the house really do kind of help you recover mentally. I'm so fried that this morning while I was doing my usual rounds on all the news sites, I was scrolling down through some headlines on Business Insider, and I saw a headline that looked really similar to a story that I've written before, and I got kind of angry because, you know, in the defense and the national security journalist world, we all tend to cover the same stories, right? So you can't get too mad when someone covers the same story in a similar way. But I was like, this is an analysis piece that looks just like mine. So I clicked on the article all angry, trying to see who stole it from me, and realized that I wrote it.
So
like,
this
sounds really familiar. It's my writing.
I wrote this. So you concluded that it's time for me to take a break?
Yeah, I'm going to need a vacation once this vacation's all over.
I mean, come on. If you lived aboard ship, you know how to do Groundhog Month or Groundhog extended period of time. Sunday's got to be different, right? You got to build in all the – I don't know. Do you have a gym at your house or not?
I do. I've got some workout stuff here at home, you know, and I've been really trying hard to get my daughter – she's just kind of getting to that age – where she's starting to understand that exercise is a thing that we can do, you know. So I've been trying to do stuff with her and have her see me doing stuff, especially because she's used to taking a lot of trips out. You know, my wife, we're fortunate that my wife is able to take some time off from work and be home with our daughter for these first few years. So my daughter's got a pretty regimented day usually, where in the morning they go on a trip, usually to a store or something kind of public to go do the shopping or what have you. And then in the afternoons they go hiking in the woods, or they go to a playground to play with other kids. You know, my wife used to work in a daycare school, so she's pretty good with this stuff. But switching to all at home here in the past few weeks has left my daughter's patience wearing thin, which has in turn left my wife's and my patience wearing thin.
So now there's a lot of people that still get outside.
Absolutely do. We're fortunate. You know, we live in a good walking neighborhood, you know, and there's a summer camp literally behind my house that obviously isn't going to be going on. The people who run that summer camp have been really nice about letting, you know, the families in the area kind of use that space to go walk around. There's plenty of woods, plenty of trails, and there's even a little beach. So we're still getting out of the house, but we're just kind of not getting out of the house as much as we used to, I guess.
I'm with you. So, all right. What about professionally? So you're surviving, but and again, I think there's an art to it. And I'm actually thriving in isolation. Just, work at home, got a gym, have had to modify some parts of my life. But I think I'm better configured than a lot of people to do that. And so, but trying to teach other people, hey man, this is what you got to do. Okay. You got to be disciplined. You got to set some goals. You got to get to some things that you haven't done in a while, like read, and set some fitness goals for yourself in terms of weight loss. You want to lose those 15 pounds? You know, the perfect opportunity to do that here as you're going to be quarantined for a couple months.
And this is, you're totally right, and it's a great time to just like for people to consider. Try not to give yourself too many allowances. You know, in these difficult circumstances, everybody's kind of, oh, you know what? Let's just order out because we're helping the community. Let's just lay on the couch for a while. Especially my friends who've been furloughed or laid off, which is awful. But,
right.
You know, they very quickly kind of adopt this, well, I'm going to spend this time on the couch mentality. Yeah, and I understand, that's... give yourself that break time. But remember, don't give yourself too many allowances because they kind of start to compound, you know. And one day you'll say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to exercise today. I'm going to eat junk food. I'm going to give myself a mental health day. That's cool. But then the next day you may say it again. And then the next day you may say, well, you know what? Let's do pizza and ice cream for lunch today, you know. And they very quickly can snowball into you not recognizing yourself anymore, losing a lot of the good disciplined behaviors that you had kind of trained into your regiment that you may have had, you know, before you went into lockdown. So I agree with you completely, Mac. Now's the time to do stuff that you've been meaning to do, but now is also the time to try to keep doing the stuff you used to do.
Right, you know? Right. But I mean, I tell people, hey, look, you know, you can do it. You know, the hardest is the first 3 or 4 days.
Yep.
You know, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, how come I'm not craving, you know, 20 Oreo cookies, and that's 5 sets of 4. I'm only going to have 4, but you do that 5 times a day, right?
I'm feeling personally attacked.
What? I speak from experience. Don't call him. We can't buy those. Dad, I have to have Oreos. Okay. And then I wind up eating half of them. So I know why I can't buy them. And so I speak from experience. That was not accusatory in nature. But, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, let me just tell you, in 2 weeks, probably either at the end of this, in 2 weeks, I will be at my active duty fighting weight.
That's awesome, man.
But let me just tell you, it ain't easy, especially at the age of 62. But let me tell you, if I could do it, and again, I have a pretty much a routine that I work. I get up at 6, I work till about 1 p.m, and then I take a PT break, and I go out in the backyard. You know, most of the time in Southern California, it's sunny. You know, I have my free weights out there. I have a treadmill. I have a bike. I have a big screen TV out there. I have a stereo out there.
That's a secret right there.
Yeah, I have a
blue. Because if you can squeeze your entertainment into your workout time,
big time.
Like, it will make your workout that much better. When I was younger, genuinely, I enjoyed the punishment of a workout. I liked limping away from the gym when I was done and feeling like I really killed it. I'm an old man now. I don't really like hurting a lot. You know what I mean? I'm going to hurt when need be, but I'm going to throw on a TV show when I'm doing my cardio and try my best to not live inside the misery of the cardio. I'm going to watch old episodes of Briscoe County Jr. and pretend I'm a cowboy. You know,
well, no,
I definitely agree.
Or, you know, I mean, what I tend to do is I'll put the news on and, you know, I'll watch whether it's the president's coronavirus briefing or whatnot. And, you know, or I'll put some music on if I'm not in the mood to watch that, because I'm not always in the mood to watch it. But you're right. That and being outside a little bit and getting out in the sun a little bit. And then I'll come in and I'll relax and read a little bit, and then I'll go back to book writing in the evening and watching TV. I discovered The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime last week and binged watched it with my daughter for most of the week, so that was good.
I haven't heard of it. Maybe I'll have to add it to the list.
Well, if you like intellectual Jewish humor, It's set in the late 50s. Lenny Bruce his character is in it. And it's she's funny as hell. And so anyway, but I mean, so, you know, as you will find out, it's not always easy for dads to connect with daughters relative to what do you want to do? What do you want to watch? We have a little bit different taste, so constantly look for things that we can enjoy together. Last night, we watched Jumanji Part 1 and Part 2. And so So we did that, and so
was it the new part two or the
yes, like, yeah.
I haven't seen the new part two yet, but I did. I liked the first one. The first, you know, The Rock and Jack Black, and
that's hilarious. That's hilarious. And then the second one is funny. But it might not be as funny as the first one, but it's still really good. I will tell you what, if you haven't seen the very very first Jumanji with Robin Williams in it,
it's a classic. It is. Like, it's a must watch.
And let me tell you, it's like scary. It is like great, like scary suspense movie if you're looking for something to watch. But yeah.
And it holds up very, very well. I mean, the CG does look, it looks a little dated,
right. But
in the universe of the movie, it totally fits. It works very well still.
Oh, my God. And I'll tell you what, it is like edge of your seat because they keep crazy stuff keeps happening. And but let me tell you, The Rock, Kevin Hart, and then Danny DeVito's in the last one. Along with,
I am a big Danny DeVito fan.
He's
I'm looking forward to that.
And Danny Glover's in it.
And I mean, how can you not love Danny Glover? Aside from the Lethal Weapon series, which are awesome movies.
Oh, he's hilarious in that.
Predator 2 is a great movie.
Right. No, so but again, you know, 16-year-old daughter and her father. And how do you – so, I mean, it's not easy to find things. I mean, because my kids – my daughters like to watch crime, you know, stuff like – and I don't like that. I don't want to watch something about narcos or murderers. That's just not my thing.
I'll be honest. My wife is a big true crime person, yeah. And she has slowly but surely converted me. I've
really?
Caught myself now watching some true crime stuff even without her.
It
feeds directly into my paranoia that everyone out there is murderers and that I need to be able to defend myself all the time. So maybe it's confirmation bias.
I think it certainly is. Like, yeah, this affirms everything I believe.
Exactly. I'm like, every time I listen to it, I'm like, see, I told you. Everyone's a cannibal. They're all monsters. And my wife's like, no, that's why this is a story. It's interesting that this one guy's a cannibal. And I'm like, no, if there's one. Trust me, there's more.
give me some coronavirus opinion.
The biggest story I would argue right now pertaining to the coronavirus and the military is gotta be, you know, the captain of that carrier who was just relieved of his command.
Yeah.
And then the acting secretary of the Navy, you know, said some things about him apparently, you know, allegedly, in an address to the ship. And I'm going to be honest with you. This is one of those situations. You know, I took a very similar position when it came to the Eddie Gallagher story, where I feel as though right off the bat, people chose teams,
right,
and affiliations. And I think that we should probably reserve our judgment on this one a little bit. I do not think that what he did was the right thing to do as far as a chain of command is concerned.
Right.
However, if he felt as though it was the only way to get done what needed to get done, and he did it knowing full well that it was going to threaten or damage or even ruin his career. In that case, I would say, well, then we need to take a hard look at what the SOPs were that forced him to feel as though he was in that position. But to be honest with you, I mean, I don't know this captain. I know that his crew supports him, and that does speak a lot about it, you know.
Or at least the 100 guys chanting did. Hey, let me just tell you, I don't know if you listened to me talk about this and you just copied everything I said just then.
No, I didn't.
But I'm with you. When he hits send on that email and he loads up the CC block with all those other people that are outside his chain of command and he sends it via a non-secure net, when he does that with and I mentioned this. You know, there's intel people all over, American intel people all over the world that are watching movements of Chinese forces right now, wondering if China is going to use this, right, this virus as some kind of cover, as everybody else is distracted to do something.
It's important to note, we don't mean maybe attack like the West Coast or something, but we definitely do mean seize islands,
right,
and seize territory within the South China Sea, which is
right.
Far-reaching economic and diplomatic ramifications.
Right. And so the Roosevelt is you know, it's nicknamed the Big Stick, right? It is part of America's defense. And so whether people like it or not, and I know that flies in the face of, you know, those sailors love him and they're chanting and all that, or at least 100 or 50 of them or whatever, that got caught on video. That's a powerful moment. But as you said, when you hit the send button with those people on that net, on, you know. He knows.
You know.
And so the question is going to be, is Alex, and I completely agree with you, what did the guys from 7th Fleet, what were they doing, and were they doing enough fast enough? And so, and if they were not, then he's absolutely justified to raise that to a higher echelon, and he should have done that on a secure net and gone to the next person, which, again, is insubordinate and grounds for relief. But the CO of 7th Fleet probably wouldn't have the guts to do it, knowing that, you know, either his or her shit was in the street too.
Exactly.
So,
and I mean, and people need to bear in mind, because I know people are already kind of drawing this down a political line, right?
Oh my God. And, well, especially after the flamethrower in chief bombs in on it.
Yeah, like, exactly. Which I don't think he should have done, but I don't think he should do a lot of things that he says on TV. But you do have to understand that even if under these circumstances, even if that captain was justified, or at least the evidence that he had to work with made him feel as though he was justified in doing that, it had to have been with the understanding that there was going to be a significant blowback on him. And to be totally honest, I mean, to echo what Mac is saying, basically, if he felt as though he wasn't going to get the response that he needed to get, or already wasn't getting the response he needed to get, there were other things he could have done to make this happen. I think that leaking it effectively, intentionally, I think he probably saw it as the way in which change would be affected the fastest. If that was indeed the case, though, he had to understand that he was probably going to be relieved, because the Navy's hands are effectively tied in these circumstances. You can't establish a precedent that this is the way you make things happen in big Navy, right? Now, again, just like Mac was saying, if it turns out he was running into interference through his direct chain of command, he was running into interference reaching further up than that as well, and he was like, the only way that this is going to happen is if I go public with this. I understand where he's coming from, but him being relieved of command was what he signed up for if those were the circumstances. He had to know this is how it would turn out. And if it was called for, if it was necessary, I'd hope that through an investigation they would, again, hold someone else accountable because he felt as though he needed to. But accountability needs to be held and maintained in these circumstances. I understand that they are incredible ones, right? A lot of the challenges that we're facing right now are unprecedented, at least in the modern era, right? So obviously, there's going to be some rule bending going on while we try to find, especially because we have established an incredibly bureaucratic system.
Alex, let me ask you this. So what was his most serious transgression?
Is it going unsecured?
Is it going in an unsecured way and releasing this into the media, or is it his letter and challenging what the guy above him is doing? That's not, if he's right, he's right, and you can stand. I mean, in my opinion, he can stand on that. What you can't stand on, in my opinion, is going public with it, going unsecure and public.
It's the wide dissemination.
Yeah. Agreed. Right. So even if he's right, he should still be terminated for going, you know.
Exactly. And that's why I say that the only way, in my opinion, that this ends with him being in the right is if, unbeknownst to us at this point, he had exhausted every other means and felt as though, I've got a very short window of time in which we can act to try to save as many sailors as possible from getting sick, potentially dying. I think, you know, it's obviously active duty service members are among the lowest risk category for these people, because active duty service members are screened for medical issues. Active duty service members tend to be in rather, at least, pretty good shape, especially if you're on ship. It gets tough to stay in great shape, but you're still in excellent shape by the average civilian standard. These people are, don't get me wrong, absolutely at risk. And it is feasible that some sailors could ultimately die because of underlying health conditions maybe we weren't aware of. But the only way this ends with him in the right is if he was looking at, you know, he had all of the index cards laid out on his desk, and he said, in order to save this many people, we need to affect change within this window of time based on what he had available to him. There was no way to do that other than going public. If that's the case, there's a problem with the leadership. There's a systemic issue within the Navy. If that is the case, he did the right thing.
Let me ask you this. I don't think that he could be exonerated, because even if I tell you is that when you go out, when you take it the venue you took it, that's still indefensible. So you can be absolutely right and still wrong in the fact that you're the custodian of a national asset. We're in a time of great instability, and wars start when there's a perception. There's a perception by one power relative to another power, Germany to Russia, that, you know what? They're not going to be able to withstand this. And it's the perception, maybe not the reality, but that perception.
And that matters.
And that matters. And so my point is this.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
His custodianship of that asset, especially in public, means that, okay, Alex is my, you know, he's Seventh Fleet, and I'm the Roosevelt. And there's somebody who's in Hawaii who's Pacific Fleet, which is the 7th and the 3rd and whoever else is out there, okay? Multiple fleets in the Indian Ocean Pacific Command. And so if I said, hey, I don't think this moving fast enough, and I'm going to tell you, I want a video teleconference with Admiral Umpty Fratz, and I'm going to request that straight to his chief of staff in the next 10 minutes, because I believe you're putting my sailors at risk, and you lay the whole thing out for him. I think that's the only way that you can do this and keep your job.
And keep your job.
Because then what happens is the guy at you know, Pacific Command, you know, Indo-Pacific Command for the Navy looks at Seventh Fleet and said, you know what? He's right. You screwed this up. You didn't move quick enough. And every point he raised, everything that you've told me that mitigates it is not a reason not to help him and do what he says. You are now relieved, right?
You know, and in a real way, let's just say devil's advocate on his behalf here. In a real way, let's say he did engage in some formal or informal communications with the next level of the chain of command,
right,
and was still met with dragged feet. We need to understand, from the outside looking in, that maybe you do see him as a leader who jumped on a grenade for his sailors. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong if you see it that way. But you need to understand that even if that's the case, it doesn't mean that the grenade goes away, right? He still jumped on it. It's still going to cost him his career. What we effectively can be arguing is whether we feel he was personally justified in what he did, or if we feel he wasn't. But the ramifications effectively need to remain the same.
Yeah.
And this is something that, you know, I'm sure you've said it during your Marine Corps career. I've said it 1,000 times. I've met those guys who were a great Marine and not a real good guy. And I've met those guys that were a terrible Marine and a real good guy, you know. There is occasionally a difference. Now, being a good person and being a good service member can absolutely overlap. But there are elements of being a good service member that don't always necessarily overlap with your personal view of what makes a good person, right? And there are circumstances where your duty supersedes your personal feelings on a subject. For a lot of us, that might happen consistently throughout your military career. You might enlist to serve your country. You might not necessarily agree with the politics pertaining to the war that you're fighting in, but that's got nothing to do with your job, right? In these circumstances where those two Venn diagrams overlap, where what you think you need to do to be a good person and what you think you need to do in order to be a good military leader of such an asset, there is a portion of that Venn diagram where they overlap. If you feel as though you need to behave outside of that overlapped portion, you have to understand the repercussions are there and they're real. We can call him a hero for jumping on the grenade, but we can't take the grenade away. He made this decision. And I don't, in not knowing the man myself, I'd have to assume that I think Crozier, Captain Crozier, was that his name?
Yeah.
I have to assume that he knew he was ending his career. So this must have felt important enough to end his career. Otherwise, I'd be kind of inclined to agree with Maudley when he said that either he did it on purpose or he was dumb or naive. Because if he didn't know this would end his career, that would either be dumb or naive. You can argue that he did the right thing.
Right.
And that's different than whether or not it's going to end his career.
Well, right? and here's the chain, the way the phone calls go, right? So he and Seventh Fleet are fighting, and Pacific Command gets involved in it because this is on their radar as well. You know, the Roosevelt's got a problem. And it's being reported in the media. And so we're working this issue. And the CNO's got to call down and say, hey, what's going on? What are we doing with the Roosevelt? Well, sir, we're trying to make arrangements with hotels on Guam. We can't just release these, you know, sailors into the base on Guam. So they're going to have to sit tight as we get this done. We estimate, you know, so if those guys had their ducks in a row and it was a timeline issue and Crozer's not having it, that's one thing. And if that's what they were getting, then, you know, Crozer going public, he didn't like it, but that's as good as the Navy could have done. And that comes from your 7th Fleet guy. That comes from your Pacific guy. Everybody's singing the same tune. And then the CNO looks at the SECNAV and says, hey, look, here's what they were doing. Here's what this guy did. You know, I don't know why he did that. He obviously disagreed. So who's the bad guy in that? Bad guy's the wrong thing. Who was the guy who didn't understand? Who was the guy who didn't accept it? Was there somebody in that chain who wasn't doing the right thing? None of those things we know now. And so
exactly.
You're going to have to wait.
Completely.
You're going to have to wait for the investigation.
You know, because I can absolutely buy the idea that nobody was doing anything wrong, but by following the standard SOP, by doing things the right way, the timelines may have been extending past what Crozer felt were acceptable and what may actually have been acceptable. This is something that we're going to have to look at hard in the after-action report for this entire coronavirus response. Is there are a number of systems, especially governmental systems, but certainly military systems, that are not designed to be able to pivot fast enough to respond to something like this. A good example that I can give, I'm going to leave some of the details out because I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but I've got a good friend who works in the aviation industry. He works for the aviation industry in a plant that provides both military and civilian aviation components. And days after Donald Trump announced that he recommends that people stay at home, you know, there were already stay-at-home orders for a number of states, including the state that this plant was in, the FAA showed up for a surprise inspection and made them reopen the plant and restaff it so that they could go through their audit. You know, and this is – in the midst of all this, they flew someone from Texas to another state to conduct an audit of a facility that was manned by, at the time, a skeleton crew because they were all told to shelter at home. Our government is so big that it's not very good at responding in unison, right? So when the president on TV says, we're going to do this, this is something that we need to do, a lot of us tend to think that that means it's done. The truth is that means the CEO of a massive conglomerate that spans millions of square miles and literally hundreds of millions of people that let's consider employees for this analogy. It takes a long time for the CEO's order to roll down the hill and affect change at the local levels, right? There are still police officers pulling people over for expired registrations, even though the DMV is closed, right? We are so bureaucratic that a number of our systems are not designed to be able to adjust fast enough for something like this. And that may well have been an element, a variable in play in the situation with the Roosevelt. We don't know. But even if it was, it doesn't change that what he did comes with repercussions. To go back to that grenade analogy again, jumping on a grenade sometimes is a dumb thing to do. Sometimes it is the most noble and heroic thing that you can do. Regardless, the outcome is the same. The grenade goes off, right? And Crozer had to know that this was going to be – I mean, when we see end his career, he's not being thrown out of the Navy. He's almost certainly going to be reassigned to something with a whole lot less you know, shine and bluster. But he had to know that this was going to be, you know, his farewell tour when he made this decision. Whether or not we, in hindsight, can say it was worth the price that he paid or not is yet to be determined, but the price remains the same.
Somebody just sent me a link to the actual test of the acting SecNav flew to Guam and spoke to the crew.
I've read it. Now, from my understanding is that it's still being considered alleged. But I'd be willing to bet it's real.
If he and here's with the post, it says this. In the words are too naive, right, or too stupid to be in command of a United States Naval aircraft carrier. Anyway, the post says this. If the acting Secretary of the Navy didn't think the transcript or the audio of the 1MC announcement wasn't going to get out in this information age,
he's too naive.
To the public, too right? He's too naive or too stupid to be the acting Secretary of the Navy. And
well, I would argue, though, that there's a real political reason why he needed to do that, though. And because this exact situation will come up in the presidential debate.
Right. Oh, you know, well, I mean, to me, look what the way he's been being painted as. And here's a question for you. So if he was insubordinate, and I think that's what he was at the end of the day. Yep. An investigation will determine who was right in this whole thing.
I agree. Right or wrong, he was insubordinate. Right, but he may well have been right as well. We don't
right.
know.
And so the insubordinate piece, and he wasn't internally insubordinate. He was externally insubordinate, which is there's some sins I cannot save you from. That is one of them. I can forgive you and save you if you had gone inside and done this, and then we find out that Hollings is fucked up. And
you know, it's important to note that you guys that have been in the Marine Corps, you guys out there who are veterans or currently in active duty, you know this conversation.
Right.
Because even though we think of it as this massive enterprise because there's a carrier involved in the 7th Fleet, we're still talking about a conversation between individuals, between guys, just like you and me. And when I was a platoon sergeant and one of my guys got in trouble, I'd always tell them, if you get it to me first, I can help you. But as soon as I get a call from the gunny, I can't help you anymore. Like, I need to hear it from you first. If you go get arrested out in town and I find out about it on the blotter, you're screwed. If you go and get arrested out in town, you call me first. I call Gunny. I tell Gunny. Gunny calls the sir. He tells sir. You're going to be in a lot less trouble than if I find out because the sir called Gunny. Right?
Yeah.
This is 101 level stuff. You know, as soon as it gets out of our hands, we have no control over it anymore.
And then my position was, look, I can save you from this stuff. And you need to look at me like Vito Corleone. Your protection money to me is showing up to work every day, being on time, being sober, and working your ass off. If you do that, I'll go to the greatest extent I can. I will go to bat for you, and I'll just tell you two quick stories. I'm a second lieutenant, and one of my sergeants went to Okinawa, and he was a good sergeant. He comes through the gate with a lampshade on his head, right, and he gets a minor offense report. And so my company commander, I'm a second lieutenant, wants me to give this guy a page 11 entry. So Monday, mid-morning, you know, the company clerk comes down. Hey, Lieutenant Mac, Captain XYZ wants to talk to you. So I go down, walk down those long buildings in Okinawa, you know, boom, boom, boom on his hat. Sure, you want to see me? He said, come on in here, Mac. And he hands me a page 11. This, you need to counsel him, sign it, and he's got to sign it or whatever, however you should do that. And it's going, you know, for his SRB. So I said, yes, sir.
For anybody who may not be familiar, that's effectively like a mark in your permanent record.
Right.
You know, your page 11 is administrative remarks. It's not all negative stuff, but a lot of times it is.
And
it follows you your entire career. It goes in every promotion package you submit.
Right. So I walk all the way back down to the other end of this building. And they were low one-story buildings, Vietnam era type, pre-Vietnam era stuff. And I walk in, and I share an office with, you know, four other platoon commanders, right? And I and our XO was in there, I think. So we're all in there. And I walk in there. And no, the three other platoon commanders were in there. And so they look at me and they're like, what's going on? And I said, he's going to give Sergeant Woolley a page 11 entry for that. And then I just stopped. I turned around and I walked back. And that's all. I just said anything else. I walked back. Boom, boom, boom. I said, sir, can I have a minute of your time? And he said, yeah, come on in. So I go in. I shut the door. And I looked at him and I said, we can't do this. And he looked at me and he said, why can't we do this? And I said, sir, he's a good Marine. I mean, he showed up here and he's worked his ass off. And he sets a good example. You know, he's not my best sergeant, but he's my best sergeant, you know, ought to be a staff sergeant and could be a gunny right now. He's behind him. He could be a staff sergeant right now. I said, we can't do this for one problem. He's never given us another problem. So he says, hand that to me. So he hands it. So I hand it to him. He crumbles it up and then he throws it at me and I catch it. And he looks at me and he says, the judgment block of your fitness report is riding on Sergeant Woolley's ass. And I said, thank you, sir. And I walked out. Now, unbeknownst to me, the walls don't go up to the ceiling. So the Lance Corporal clerks are on the other side of the wall and they're listening to every fucking word, right?
And, as one of those Lance Corporal clerks, I can assure you that we are.
And so I went back, I walk in, and they're like, my lieutenant buddy's like, what'd you do? And I said, I told him we couldn't do it. And they're like, what did he do? I said, he threw it at me and told me that my judgment block on my fitness report was riding on Woolley's ass. And they said, what are you going to do? And I said, nothing. I'll talk to Woolley like I'd talk to anybody else, but I'm not going to mention this. And that's what I did. But before I spoke to Woolley, the Lance Cooley Underground was into my squad bay and they knew the story. And months later, I found out about it. They're like, yeah, Lieutenant Mack, let me tell you, you know, you were kind of okay, good from the start, but let me tell you when your stock went way up. And I was like, when? And they're like, when you went in and confronted Captain Bickham about Sergeant Woolley. And I just looked up and was like, how did y'all know that? And they looked at me and they shook their heads. They're like, we know about everything.
I'm telling you, the Lance Corporal Underground is the most powerful intelligence gathering and organization in the planet. I still learn things from the Lance Corporal Underground. I get messages in my Facebook guys who are still on active duty.
I'll tell you.
They're just like, hey, man, you know what I heard?
We would all of a sudden, like, we'd be in Iraq or something, and I'd be in a combat operations center one night, and all of a sudden you'd see everybody, like, busy. And, like, somebody'd say, hey, what's going on? And you'd hear, firewall's down. And you're like, what? That meant every porn site that they could get on until the firewall got back up was being solicited by DOD sources. And doing all the shit they couldn't do with the firewall.
I worked in the COC, and I can neither confirm nor deny those allegations.
I'm like, how do you guys know so quick? And they look at me, and they're like, sir, Lance Corporal Underground, man. We know everything.
Yeah, because the S6 guy who runs it texted us. He was like, guys.
He IMs us in our Lance Corporal Underground chat window that nobody can see but us. And that's no bullshit. And I'll give you the other example where you don't have any. I'm a first lieutenant. I was on the USS Ranger as the XO of the Marine Detachment. And when you do nuclear weapons drills and you have to do them, you do them with live ammunition. The Marines do not know if it's a drill or not. You can't tell them. So every time they leave, they assume it's a real deal. And that's how you do it. And so when the crew hears a certain word, you know, so it could be Operation Rodeo, Operation Rodeo. I used to go up and brief everybody who was new to the crew. When you hear that and you see Marines, get on the deck and put your hands out so they know that you're part of ship's company. Because anybody who doesn't do that, they know doesn't belong here, doesn't know the rules, and deadly force is going to commence immediately, and it's going to start with get on the deck. So anyway, we do a drill, and my Marines are going through the ship. And they're hauling ass. Now, they're trying to get to the nuclear weapon space that's been breached. And they know the ship, but like they know the back of their hand. And if this alarm goes, there's going to be three Marines going this way and three Marines going this way. And then they're going to coordinate their movement down together. So anyway, they're doing that. come around, and a dark blue sailor, a black sailor, sees he doesn't get on the ground. So they grab him, and they my Marine says, you know, he says, get on the deck. And the guy just looks at him, and he says, get your black ass on the deck. And then he grabs him, and he slams him on the deck, which is what he's supposed to do. So they then take off and do their thing. The sailor comes in to find me, and he says, sir, you're the guard officer? I said, I am. And he said, could I talk to you? And so I wound up charging the Marine, right, with conduct unbecoming. And so out of my 15 NCOs, 13 of them were black, you know, just by random assignment, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll tell you, on sea duty with the personnel reliability program, you had great Marines. And if they blinked wrong, you could get rid of them, and nobody asked the question why. They just sent you another one. And so, I mean, these are good Marines. They came to me as a group and said, sir, could we talk to you? And I said, sure. And so they come into my office, they shut the door, and, you know, we're all standing room only in there, right? And they're like, we want to talk to you about Lance Corporal Stevens. And I look, because we had two Stevens, one with the V, the admin guy, and the PH, right, guy who was in the guard. And I said, PH. And they said, yes. They said, sir, we talk like that. Stevens is not racist, right? But that's the way we talk. And it's our fault that he said that because, you know, we talk to each other, move your white ass, move your black ass, right? And Stevens didn't mean that in a racist way. And I looked at them, you know, to our discussion, and I said, there's some mistakes that I can save Stevens from. Now, if this was something that happened in the Mardet area, and it was a Marine, right, to quote but Alex's point, this is not. If I find Stevens innocent or I drop the charges, what is every sailor, in particular black sailors and black chiefs on this ship, going to say? That they have racists in that detachment and they didn't do shit about it. I said, so I
can't. You're 100% right.
Right? So, you know, pretty low level examples of things I can save you from and things I can't.
But I would argue, like, low level, they feel low level because as far as the chain of command is concerned, it's fairly low. But in as far as interpersonal relations go, huge. I feel as though these aren't very different than the circumstances we're talking about here. It's a group of leaders, but I would argue all Marines are a group of leaders, right? So it's a group of leaders who are having these same kind of discussions, but the politics at play are really very similar, right? And there are some things I can save you from, some things I can't save you from. And if you're going to make a decision, which, you know, in that instance, that Marine didn't really make a decision so much as, you know, it was just something that he said. But if this captain did make this decision, even if he's right, he still made the decision, right? And you can't save him from that. And we can herald him for sacrificing his career if you feel as though he was right. But we can't unsacrifice the career, you know? I understand that a lot of people say there's already hundreds of thousands of people who have signed, you know, a thing asking to have him reappointed as the captain of the Roosevelt. You can't do it at this point, you know? It's a... You know, just like Mac was saying, there are some things that I can save you from. There are some things that are outside my control. And you can't put a captain back in charge of a carrier, especially knowing full well that he stepped outside the chain of command. And effectively, despite the fact that it panned out for him negatively at first, if he gets his job back and everything, what we're really establishing precedent is that you can step outside the chain of command. If you don't think that what Big Navy is doing is what you think is best, you can step outside the chain of command. That is not a precedent.
You can write your own script. Let me just read you a little bit of the letter, and then, Alex, you can comment on it. When I first heard you had COVID cases, this is what he said over what's called the 1MC. That's essentially the PA system aboard a ship. All right. When I first heard you had COVID cases on here, I was actually planning on being here last Tuesday after I went to see the Mercy off in Los Angeles. So I want you to know that no one in my level has been ignoring the situation here from the beginning. I reached out to your CO through my chief of staff very, very early on this crisis. on Sunday, I told him that I wanted to come out to the ship and if it would be okay or if it would not be too disruptive. I told him that because I wanted to be able to help, if there was anything else he needed in as this massive effort was underway to get you guys healthy and clean and safe. He waved me off. He said he felt like things were under control. He said he had been concerned a day or so before that things weren't moving quickly, but he still wanted to get more beds, but he didn't think it was necessary. He also talked to my chief of staff and emailed back and forth with him. On Sunday night, he sent an email, and that email went out to a broad audience of people. I know that I mentioned that it was over 20. We believe that it was forwarded to far more, even more than that. And immediately,
well, certainly, wouldn't you?
It was picked up by the San Francisco Chronicle, which published sensitive information about the material condition of a U.S. naval warship. If he didn't think, in my opinion, that this information wasn't going to get into the public in this day and information age that we live in, then he is either too naive or B, too stupid to be a commanding officer of a ship like this. The alternative is that he did this on purpose, and that's a serious violation of the UCMJ, which you are all familiar with. That message and all the contents of that message was perfectly fine for him to send to people in his chain of command in a confidential way so that they could get acting on it. He, in fact, could have given it to me, either my chief of staff or to me, or I asked him to do that when I first reached out to him on the ship when we first found out there was a COVID case here. He was betrayal of trust with me. Now, it says SIC in there, which means
How he said it, but right, probably not what he meant.
Right. With his chain of command, with you, with 800 to 1,000 people who, with your shipmates on shore right now, busting their asses every day to do what they need to do to convert what they do in a normal day to get you guys off of here, to get you safe, to get you healthy, to get you clean, to get you back on this ship to do what you're supposed to be doing. It was a betrayal. And I can tell you one thing, because he did that, he put it in the public forums, and it has now become a very big controversy in Washington, D.C. and across the country about a martyr CO who wasn't getting the help he needed and therefore had to go through the chain of command, a chain of command which includes the media. And I'm going to tell you something, all of you. There is never a situation when you should consider the media as part of your chain of command. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, any additional thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a funny joke to say that he had to know that this was going to be released as well. In all honesty, I think that he certainly knew this was going to be released as well because bearing in mind the current political climate, the fact that there's going to be a presidential election this year, and bearing in mind that the Trump administration is already, from the Democrats in particular, facing a lot of criticism for the way that they've managed the COVID-19 situation, I'm not certain that Joe Biden can form complete sentences at this point. But assuming that he can, in the debate, he is going to say, "You were too slow to respond to COVID-19," and then when a sailor in the Navy felt as though you were being too slow to respond and he tried to speed it up, you fired him. Now, that's not necessarily the truth, but that is exactly how it's going to be presented. You can feel as though that's true or you can feel as though it's not. I'm not arguing either way. But in terms of perception, this is going to be a running theme in the presidential election. Number one, the Trump administration's response to the coronavirus, for better or for worse, right? He is going to market it as though they have done an excellent job and could not have done better. They've already been saying that a lot.
Right.
The Democrats are going to market it as though all of the problems we have are as a result of Donald Trump. The truth obviously lands somewhere in between. But when it comes to this framing, it is going to be you were too slow to react. And then when military leaders tried to take it under their own power to act faster, because you were so slow to react, you fired them for it publicly. Now, the truth is that he's being fired for stepping outside of the chain of command, which, as Mac and I both said, even if you think that what he did was the right thing, that's still the repercussion right. of stepping outside your chain of command. So in this presidential election, whether it comes up in a debate or it comes up in attack ads or it comes up in media coverage, Donald Trump is going to have to face questioning about the separation of this captain from his ship. And that is why I think we're seeing the acting Navy secretary take this so head on. Trump has already made it clear how he feels about this situation. So the secretary of the Navy is certainly acting within what he understands to be his commander's intent. But he wants to move quickly so that it doesn't have to be Trump's decision. He doesn't want Trump to have to make this call or even have to weigh in on it, because there's going to be political fallout for his boss when that happens. And it's in anyone's best interest, whether you work at Arby's or you're the acting secretary of the Navy. Just like Max said, the way that you pay into my protection is by busting your ass and doing a good job every day. Him enacting his commander's intent is him busting his ass and doing a good job for his leadership every day. He's trying to insulate the Trump administration from this decision. Donald Trump didn't do an excellent job of that by speaking out about it publicly. But by making this something that was – the change was affected at the Secretary of the Navy level. It didn't need to go higher than that. So ultimately, one could contend that Trump doesn't need to be held accountable for that decision if you're going to use it to attack him, right? And I know that a lot of people don't like the idea that politics have to play a role in military policy, but the truth is that from the minute you have a star on your collar, in all honesty, a silver leaf will do it too in a lot of cases, you are a part politician. You know, the things that you say, the statements that you make, the decisions that you make, the command decisions that you make all reflect the administration that you're working under, whether you voted for the guy or not. And we need to be aware of the fact that this is already being shaped both by the Democrats and by the Republicans as a talking point for this upcoming election. And I'd ask, you know, I guess in my closing remarks about this subject, I'd ask that you try to look at it instead of, well, I voted for Trump, so I'm rooting for Trump or his side, or I didn't vote for Trump, so I'm rooting for the Democrats' side. I would say reserve your judgments. Wait for whatever's going to be publicly released of the investigation to be released, and then make your decision then when you actually know who knew what wasn't happening, whether or not you feel as though Crozier was justified in what he did or not. And remember that even if he was justified, he still jumped on this grenade knowing full well it was going to go off.
And I'll say this. I mean, if the Secretary of the Navy is remotely right, he should have been fired. And he should have been fired like yesterday if anything close to what the acting Secretary of the Navy is saying is close to the truth. And then for him to take that and then go outside the chain to go outside the chain of command, then to me it's like don't even talk to me. Don't even talk to me. I mean, if your little heart goes pitter patter when you hear the crew chanting, right, and this guy's, you know, the little engine that's standing up to big Navy who didn't want to take care of these sailors. If that's what you believe, then I got it. You have a nice day. Okay. But at the end of the day, though, the truth is important. And so, you know, the truth will come out as if the Navy doesn't, and the Navy will have to investigate it. So the truth at some point will come out. Whether will we ever see that? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, but again,
the bottom line, though, you cannot defend, right, a guy of this stature, you know, going outside of his chain of command. And so even if he's right, he's wrong.
It's exactly right. If you really see this as a circumstance, and again, we don't know all the details, but if you see this as a circumstance of a captain jumping in front of a bullet for his crew, doing the right thing doesn't stop the bullet. You know, he still made an egregious error in judgment as per command SOP. You can feel like it's justified. You can argue in his favor, but the act is still the act.
You know what? You know what's weird? Why is the commander of a aircraft carrier talking to the Secretary of the Navy? I mean, there's like, right? There's Seventh Fleet. There's PAC, right? There's Indo-PAC now, guy, right? Right, and then there's Com, Nav, Surface Forces above those guys. Like there's like admirals stacked up above this. You know, he's essentially a colonel, right? He's a colonel. Yeah. He's a captain in the Navy.
That may well be part of the problem. It may well be that we have such a long and drawn out line of communications. I mean, I can tell you with any formal communications that you have, particularly in the Navy and the Marine Corps. It's all done via drafted naval letter often, and then every level that it goes up, it needs to receive a commander's endorsement. Those commander endorsements are written by clerks. So what ends up happening is if you're doing something in a form of formal written communication and you want it to get up to the Secretary of the Navy, it's going to need 10 endorsements on it from 10 different clerks with big piles of shit to do on their desks every way up the chain of command. So maybe the fact that there were so many rungs in the ladder above him, maybe that was actually the issue. Maybe everybody was acting in their own – everybody was doing what they needed to do, but it was just moving slowly because our formal processes are slow. I don't know.
Yeah, I would think – though now the way we do communications now when you can pick up the bat phone and you can talk to him like right now, to me, let me tell you and this is a problem with technology – when both in Iraq and Afghanistan, with the advent of full motion video, and the way we communicate in a permissive environment, right, is that we have these chat windows, and so you'll see, for instance, RCT5 Command 1, right? That's the CO. That's the 3. That's all the people that would be on that radio net or in that chat window. Right, then you'll see RCT5 COC. That's fires, intel, right? And then all the battalions that are supported by RCT5. So, like during the Battle of Fallujah, or when I was in Helmand and we were fighting a lot in Helmand, you would have people from the MEF, you would have people from Baghdad in there, and the rule is this. It's fine for your situational awareness if you want to keep track of this, right? And for instance, this is how some of the things people do. You could take the window and you could say, if in this window somebody uses the word, the initials WIA or KIA, right, or CIVCAS, which is civilian casualties, I want you to turn that window red. And you have it on your screen. You have three screens in front of you. On one screen, you have Merc Chat, which is what it was known as. You have that RCT5 box is in one small corner of your screen, and it scrolls until somebody uses one of those words on a day, and then it turns red, and then your eye slews to it immediately. What's going on there? Where the rule is, you can watch to build your situational awareness because maybe you're a medical person in Kandahar, and you're really looking for a gunshot wound to the head, which tells you that all brain injuries go to Kandahar. So we're going to be working here shortly, gents, ladies and gents. And so that's a good use of it, right? What's bad is when you get somebody from MEF, fires or the MEF 3 saying, hey, we're watching the chat, right, in 1st Battalion, 4th Marines chat window, and they just had a platoon or a company report this, and we don't think, and it was like, that's how we connected we are. And so to me, when you have the SecNav involved with the captain of a ship, what's wrong with that picture? Everybody else gets out of the way? I mean, and that's one of the problems that you fight. And so the rule was, it's okay to be a voyeur in the chat window. The second you say anything to anybody and you go outside your chain of command, you and everybody that's associated with your command gets eliminated, right? Blocked from the chat window by our guys.
And justifiably so.
Right.
Because the last thing that you need are backseat drivers in a combat situation.
But you can see now virtually anything. So anything that the Roosevelt is doing, probably, if you have high enough clearances to get into their – full motion video suites and things like that. You can watch it. You can watch their flight ops. You can listen to announcements. You can see what's going on. You can do that. And sometimes, and that's hard because you have to have people that will stay in their lane. And so sometimes this granularity, to me, if if Crozier was relieved, should have been by, you know, the admiral of Seventh Fleet. His immediate superior should have relieved him, not the Secretary of the Navy. But so, I mean, if what Modley says is true, why was he having that conversation and not guys below him? So anyway, I agree. So it'll be interesting to see as more of this comes out what happens, because very visible. But young Marines go through it all the time. Young NCOs go through it. He told me, I know it's wrong, right? And, you know, with junior officers that probably maybe average or mediocre. I've been in the Marine Corps for 7 years. I'm a sergeant. And what he's telling me is wrong, and it's not the right way to do it. What do I do? Stand here and do it? And know that, or should I go to, you know, another one of the platoon sergeants who can talk to some? And that's the smart people learn how to do it that way, right? Let me go talk to Staff Sergeant so-and-so, who's universally respected in the company, and he can go to Lieutenant so-and-so, who's got, you know, doesn't have a platoon sergeant right now, that thing's gapped, and we got a younger guy in there, and he can say, hey, sir, I overheard some talk about this. Can I give you a better way to do that? And you learn, and the guys who can learn the art of that go far. The guys who feel like they have to confront somebody, that's not the way you do it.
That's one of the things I'd always tell new Marines when they checked into my unit, is that the most important management that you can do as a Marine leader, and in the Marine Corps especially, you're a leader, you can have one stripe, you're a leader, you know, and the most important thing that you do, the most important thing that you manage is your communications up, not necessarily your communications down, right? When it comes to your communications down, you can have a little bit less tact. You can say, I don't give a shit. This is how we're doing it, you know. A good leader often maybe wouldn't, but you don't have to have as much tact. But you need to be able to very effectively manage your upward communications up the chain of command. Because if you're worried about your Marines, you need to make sure that you can present their situation in a way that benefits them. If you're worried about your own situation, you need to make sure that you can address that with your chain of command without removing all of your own credibility, right? It's important that you're credible in front of your Marines, but it's essential that you are credible to your chain of command. They need to understand that you will communicate with them in the way that needs to be done and as quickly as you need to do it in order for them to have faith in your ability to lead.
And I will tell you this.
At the very bottom.
A lot of times, you know, when you're junior, you just don't know. And so you're not doing this because you're trying to screw it up. Right, you're doing this because you're just inexperienced. And so, speaking as somebody at every level who, you know, you're a novice when you get there, one of the things you hope is people come to you and say, hey, you know, sir, could I talk to you about this? Or that somebody who's got a lot of experience comes to you and says, hey, Lieutenant, you know, another a staff sergeant, right, who would walk in and say, hey, because really what they're doing is they're saving you from embarrassing yourself.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And so, but it's hard, you know, depending on how well they get along personally and some other things, it's hard for them to do that. And so I agree with Alex. It's one of the most important things, because if you can't conquer that skill, then what tends to happen is, you get alienated from the people above you. They don't have confidence. But when they see you're young and you have a little bit of savvy relative to how to navigate this complicated world of people's egos and decisions and all that kind of stuff, you get identified pretty quick as, hey, he's smart. He knows how to hang. He knows how to. You can count on him when there's pressure on, and he or she will do the right thing, and that's how a lot of, you know, young people first get noticed, is their maturity in terms of communicating. I would say up and down.
You know, I agree.
Looks at their more, and Alex, right, you can be certainly more coarse on your Marines below you. Hey, everybody, shut up. Okay, I don't think he really look the lieutenant or the staff sergeant. Hey, look, they're new. Okay, I don't think he really has all the facts. We're going to execute exactly what he said to do, and then I'm going to go talk to him, and then I'm going to do a little seed planting, and I'll be back in a little bit. and you're teaching them how to do it. You don't need
absolutely.
To go.
You know, and you don't realize that's actually something that I've been learning as a parent is that I need – if I want my daughter Reagan to be able to engage with, let's say, my wife and communicate effectively, she's got to see me doing it.
Right.
You know, and I always tell her to use her words. But then, you know, anytime that I have a bad habit of, if I'm angry, if I'm very frustrated, if I'm stressed out, I walk away. I usually do that because I don't want to be near people I care about when I'm being all grumpy. But I've been trying to do that less and less, and instead tell my daughter, you know, big feelings are okay. You can tell your Marines, big feelings are okay. You just have to know how to discuss them without letting the feelings overwhelm you. You need to be able to convey what's important. And you got to be able to put those feelings on the back burner sometimes. It's an important skill to have for anybody, but it is an absolutely essential skill to have for a leader in the military. And one that I would argue, obviously, Captain Crozier must have demonstrated repeatedly through his career to this point in order to get there.
Yeah, he's a made man, right? I mean, the only way you're not a made man after you captain the Roosevelt is if you screw it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you in mafia parlance, you're a made man, and so it's yeah. But again, it's not the way I see it explained. You know, Alex and I for the last hour almost have kind of pulled it apart. That you know what was his actual transgression, right? And so you know, more to follow because, like I said, after you, and I'll put the link to that letter in this story. But if what have you heard about that transcript, Alex? Have you heard that it's actual?
No, I've heard a lot of people going, "I bet you it's real," is what I've heard. But I haven't. I have no legitimate sources telling me that it's real. But it's kind of like the, you know, China lying about their numbers for the coronavirus. It's one of those things where I know a lot of guys in the intelligence community. I know a lot of guys in the special operations community, and I know even more that used to be, right? And so it's one of those times where from everybody that's in the know, I hear them say, we don't have any formal confirmation, but we're just about certain. And then anybody who's not in the know goes, yeah, I mean, I buy it, right? And this is similar. The people I know in the Navy go, yeah, I don't know for sure, but I buy it. And the people who used to be in the Navy that I've spoken to have said, yeah, I totally buy it, you know? So I think it's likely true. I think that not only is it likely true, I think that it was fairly intentional that it hit the press so quickly. That's just my personal read.
I'm reading more. CNN reporters Barbara Starr, Ryan Brown, and Evan Perez confirmed with Navy officials on Monday that Maudley's comments were accurate. They were first reported by the Daily Caller. And here's the audio version. This is from Task and Purpose.
I've been wanting to come out to this ship since we first found out you had COVID cases on here. I was actually planning on being here last Tuesday after I went to see the Mercy off in Los Angeles. So I want you to know that no one at my level has been ignoring the situation here from the very beginning. I reached out to your CO through my chief of staff very, very early on in this crisis. On Sunday, I told him that I wanted to come out to the ship and if it would be okay or if it would be too disruptive. I told him that because I wanted to be able to help if there was anything else he needed as this massive effort was underway to get you guys healthy and clean and safe. He waved me off. He said he felt like things were under control. He had been concerned a day or so before that things weren't moving quickly, but things, you know, he still wanted to get more beds, but he didn't think it was necessary. He also talked to my chief of staff and emailed back and forth with him. On Sunday night, he sent that email. And that email went out to a broad audience of people. I know that I mentioned that it was over 20. We believe it was forwarded to even far more than that. And immediately it was picked up by the San Francisco Chronicle, which published sensitive information about the material condition of a naval warship. If he didn't think, it was my opinion, that if he didn't think that information was going to get out into the public in this information age that we live in, then he was A, too naive or too stupid to be the commanding officer of a ship like this.
Holy shit.
I've got to say, the fact that audio has already hit the presses tells me that it was very intentional that this messaging got to the press quickly.
Listen, hold on. I'm going to just back this up. I'm going to play about 15 seconds of it. But I want you to listen to the crew yell when he says, too naive or too stupid. All right. I paused it too early.
Get out into the public in this information age that we live in. Then he was A, too naive or too stupid to be the commanding officer of a ship like this.
What the fuck?
That was a Marine. I'm telling you right now, that was a Marine on ship.
That, you know, not to make light of that, but that was fucking funny. Anyway, so I guess there you go. Was that? Yeah, that's on Task and Purpose's website. I'll put the link in for that story written by Jeff Schogel, who's a longtime writer for Marine Corps Times. Actually, who was the backbone of Marine Corps Times for a long time. What's going on in the sandbox? What do you guys got going before I let you go?
Well, literally, I just published a story literally as we came on about the new defense-wide, the force-wide order to wear cloth masks in public for service members, as well as family members and dependents that are on base, civilian employees they've got to on base as well. So we're keeping everybody updated and informed on formal developments related to the coronavirus. We're still not – I mean, we do some entertainment content where it's like, here's some movies to watch while you're quarantined. But when it comes to coronavirus specifically related content on Sandbox News, sandboxnews.com, we are only publishing news stories that include formal statements from the Defense Department, the CDC, individual commands, especially when it comes to basic training stuff, or the executive branch, right? We're not interested in the political bickering that's going on related to COVID-19. We're not interested.
Wait, can I make a comment?
Yeah, by all means.
You don't need another reason to go, if you haven't, to go to Sandbox News, okay? Because I will tell you this. It is absolutely disgusting just go through the news. And I have two news feeds. One's a domestic feed and one's an international feed. Mm-hmm. You know, and the president's polarizing most of the time. But I mean, I would tell you, for every out of every 10 articles, 8 of them are political bullshit.
Absolutely.
Right? And 2 of them deal with facts and science and government action and things like that. And not the editorial type, right? Just these are the things that are going on.
We're trying to work hard to not fall into any of those traps, right? So our content is very specifically aimed at informing.
I want to give you some advice. You better be doing a lot of Liz Hurley bikini pictures on the down low, or else you're going to be out of business.
I'm telling you, man, I'm confident. And actually, I would love to announce this before we get off. We just closed quarter one, right?
Yes.
We just closed Q1. The end of Q4, which was October, November, December of last year, I came on part-time for a week or so in December just to kind of get my feet wet. I just had to report my Q1, findings. And thanks to you guys, very literally, thanks to the people who have been going to Sandbox News since I came on, we've increased traffic by 40% quarter over quarter, which is a huge deal to me. We went from in the 3 millions to near the 5 millions in terms of views per quarter, which is huge for me. But most importantly, I mean, the guys that have been able to bring on bring the real credibility, right? I brought the Rolodex. They brought the great work. But you guys clicking on the site legitimately, very literally, is the reason why we've had such a big increase in traffic since I came on. So thank you guys so much. If you can keep checking out Sandbox News, share it with your friends. We're small enough that I know when I say 4 million, 5 million views, it sounds like a lot. It adds up very quickly. One or two views here and there make a huge difference. So if you guys support the type of news that we're doing, where we're not ascribing to a political affiliation, where we're not sensationalizing stories for traffic, if you think that's the right way to do it, if you'd like to see more of that, the best way that you can vote for it is by sharing it. You know, if we can prove that this model of sensationalism-free reporting is cost-effective, is effective, can support itself, it's self-sustaining, we'll see other outlets doing it. So I really see us as an opportunity. We're a case study. Right. And in a couple of years, we may find that it turns out that only polarizing and sensational stuff works, and I'll live in a cardboard box. Or in a couple of years, we'll find out that the world out there is ready for that. So any help that you guys can give me to get that word out genuinely means a lot. We're still a pretty small outlet. We're small potatoes compared to the other mill outlets out there. But a lot of them work with us, and they're great guys. But if you can support us, literally just clicking on a story on Sandbox News once a day makes a huge difference in a real way. So thank you for those who have been doing it already, and thank you in advance to anybody who wants to go check us out from here.
All right. I just want to give a shout-out to Avis as my optimist of the day. I just got an email in my live at allmarineradio.com email inbox from Avis. Need a rental car today? We're open. Okay, probably not, but I just want to I want to commend you for your positive outlook on the world.
It's good to know.
And wish you all the best of luck with that shit. That is funny. Need a rental car today? Probably not there, big man. I will tell you this. I mean, Alex, I'll tell you the thing that I'm worried about. You know, 53% of the country lives paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And $1,200 does not go very far, depending on where you live, just about any place in this country. And there are going to be –
I live in the Atlanta suburbs, and $1,200 will not pay a month of rent.
Right. And there's going to be a lot of people – that are really hurting. And then if you live paycheck to paycheck, even if I tell my landlord I'm not paying my rent and he can't evict you, because in most of the country there's been, you know, those eviction ordinances have been put on hold. Where do I get my food? How do I buy gas? Where do I get the money for that? And let me tell you, think about 53% of the country, 72% of the country says, if I miss one paycheck, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. So
I'm with them.
Yeah. And so I'm lucky because I'm retired, but I still count on All Marine Radio and really post-traumatic winning. Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but since groups of 50 or more are illegal in most states, post-traumatic winning is going nowhere anytime soon until I get the virtual version of it up, which I'm going to get up this afternoon and then try to tackle some of it that way just to keep a nostril out of the water. But, you know, to me, that's, you know, we're all focused on the death, right? And well, we should be. I mean, but I will tell you what, there's a much greater calamity coming. And then now school's canceled for the year. So what about families with special needs kids? What about families that have, you know, just suppose, Alex, that your wife worked. Now, starting in March, you know, we're going to have to put our kid back in daycare, you know, because he or she's not going to school anymore.
You know, and I mean, I grew up very literally poor enough that I was one of those free lunch kids at school, you know. And for a lot of families – I know that it hurts to even think about, but for a lot of families, they do rely on that for their kids to get at least one good meal a day. In a very real way, guys like Mac and I are fortunate that the jobs that we do, we can do from home. But the problem is, as Mac's getting to, is that on the other end of this, our economy is going to be in very rough shape. A lot of people. When I say our economy, I don't mean stock prices. I mean people.
No, I mean families.
They're going to be in really rough shape.
Right. Yeah. And with all the things that, you know, you saw stories over the weekend over, you know, the financial hardship as well as the close quarters, domestic violence incidents are going up around the country. And so to me, Colleen and I got up on Saturday and I said, come on, we have to go through the cupboards and, you know, what we don't need, we'll donate to a food shelter. So,
and good on you for it, man. Honestly.
Well, we went through the cupboards and everything that I don't use, right? And there's not that much. I'm not a big, like, I don't like Shop Like a Woman. If I don't buy it if I'm not going to eat it. And so we went through our cans, and we got about a dozen cans of food and a couple. And so Colleen says, okay, Dad, I need to look at expiration dates. I said, okay. I said, those are bullshit. Why? And so she then throws like 11 of the 12 cans out. She said, Dad, we can't take expired food to a food shelter, a food bank. I said, really? Why not? I said, give it to me. I'll eat it. She said, stop it. So we had one can of food. I said, I'm not going to take one can of food down there. But my intention was good, okay? So I just want to make people sensitive. There's people that are going to fight for existence, right, subsistence in our culture. And whether it's a one of those $25 Visa cards that you can buy and drop off at your local, you know, food dispensary, or whoever gives out aid that you believe in your community. If you're in a position to do that, even if you're just in a little position to do that because
every little bit counts.
Oh generally. My God. So anyway, well, first of all, hey, congratulations on the traffic and,
thank you very much.
And, well, and again, I've been an advocate of that, you know, Alex, for a long time. And that is, you know, there's a market out there for people that do it better. Right. And people that even the discussion that we've had today about, you know, about the relief of the CEO of the Roosevelt, you know, I think articulate, footnoted, you know, pull it apart, you know, look at it, not emotional, not political. And I think people can walk away with the understanding that, you know what, I now understand the issue, and whether he's right or is wrong will be determined ultimately by facts. But in the United States military, you cannot be insubordinate in public and expect to survive. And I get that. So anyway, so again, congratulations. Thank you very much for doing this. I know we're a little bit over, but I certainly appreciate it.
Oh, man, it's always a blast to come on here. And again, guys, please check out sandboxnews.com. It's sandbox with two X's. Or you can check out sandboxwith2x's.us and just click on the news tab. And you'll find me. So check out some of the great stuff we've got. We've got some awesome stuff from Army Ranger Luke Ryan that just went up today. We've got some great stuff from some Navy SEALs, some CIA guys, and a great story about how to maintain kind of mental resiliency in isolation, written by an F-35 pilot who talks about the things that he does to maintain mental resiliency during combat flights and how he can translate that to everyday life. By all means, please give us a look. Give us a share. Give us a like on Facebook. Every little bit really does count.
You know, and I'll just one more thing about living Groundhog Day. If you can set some goals to include reading, so you're going to be smarter, weight loss, and those things begin to happen, all of a sudden your whole outlook of Groundhog Month changes. Hey.
I agree.
Holy shit. In two weeks, I'm going to be at my active duty fighting weight. You could. Fucking boom, motherfucker. Right? I can do this. I know how to do this, and it's not pleasant, but you know what? I've done harder things in my life, and I'll get through this too, and I can do this. I think when you have a few, you know, when you have a little bit of success that, you know, your whole attitude about it changes. So anyway, so good luck. Thank you for the visit.
Hey, good luck to you too, man. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Mr. Sandbox himself. And you can find his work at sandbox.news.com. Alex Hollings. That'll do it for today. So on a Monday, you know, thank you very much for listening. And that whole thing about food banks and things like that, you know, if you're in a position to help, you got to help. Because the nation will not have gone through anything like this since World War II. This whole collective suffering thing. And the nation's going to suffer. It's going to suffer. And the people who will suffer the most are the people that have the least. And so they will be out of work as their jobs don't come back as quick. Some will be out of work permanently. And with all the with all of the problems that causes. So don't be afraid to pitch in and help. It's what we do. So thanks for listening. Tomorrow... Don Shields is going to join me. He's my friend. He's a director of public health, formerly a director of public health, and Grand Forks, North Dakota. And, you know, I like to talk public health every once in a while. And just from a guy who did it most of his life, he's a retired Air Force veteran, Don is. And what has his attention in all of this? And so if you have any questions you want me to ask Don that you haven't seen answered, then give me a call. Or don't – well, you can give me a call, but probably shoot me an email. Yeah. I neglected shithole weather this morning. Yep. So let me get to that right now before I leave for the day. In Hickory, North Carolina, it's a picture of a Irish setter and a little kid. Mostly sunny to start, then a few afternoon clouds, a stray shower or thunderstorm is possible. Looking for a high of 79 in North Carolina. Winds out of the west at 5 to 10. How about that? That's the first sergeant. And that's his nephew with his dog. That's kind of classic little kid. Squatted down in that squat, that deep squat that little kids can sit in forever. Because they're flexible like that. With his Irish setter in the background. There's some big North Carolina pine trees. And then from Chris in Massachusetts. He's in Auburn, Mass. right now. Sunny, bright, blue skies all day. It's going to be nice all day. Looking for a high of 55 degrees in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Winds out of the northwest at 10 to 12. He's at a sportsman club, which I imagine is some kind of hunting event. So, yeah, nice picture of the lake there. As we go out the door today, I just want to finish with, again, keep Jack Riley's family in your thoughts and prayers. He lost his oldest son last week, and Jack is the one that found him, which is probably a good thing for other people. But Jack Riley's been one of the great inspirations to me and one of the certainly one of the silver linings that I've experienced in you know, doing post-traumatic winning is meeting him, getting to know him, and, you know, in some way, shape, or form, calling him my friend. So it is not the circle of life for parents to bury their children, and he will do that at the end of this whole coronavirus thing. Although I did not know him, a lot of my friends are stunned and mourning the passing of Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Hollipeter. He was formerly commanding officer of 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, and he was headed to the Infantry Officer Course, which is a prestigious position in the Marine Corps, and passed away very suddenly over the weekend. So so we'll leave today with this in their honor. I have to tell you, man, I hate that stuff. but you know what? It's the way we do it. And in its own sadness, it has its own beauty. So have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit of public health. If you have any questions that you want me to ask Don Shields, by all means, shoot me an email, live.almarineradio@gmail.com, and I will tee that thing up, and we'll ask Don Shields, a retired Air Force guy. So have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on a Monday. All Marine Radio, over and out.